Would you please stand and join us for the Pledge of Allegiance?
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Dave, I think we'll take you first if your issue's out of the way.
We have one item for approval this morning. This is a right-of-way vacation of Cox Road. This is property used for the new interchange at I-75 and Hamilton Mason Road.
Move to approve.
Second.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
Commissioner Dixon?
Yes.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Everything in the planning department.
Good. Getting everybody healthy over there. Bill Baltzinger, Lee Martha.
That was about done.
That's all Dave's got?
Yes, sir.
I'd like to welcome all the judges and counselors here this morning. Next on the agenda would be Gary Yates and the Common Pleas judges. So.
Common judge, please, come on. Administrative judge, speak.
Okay. Sure.
Judge Hedrick's going to pass out some information, please.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
Is this where we give instructions to the judges? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I had it backwards.
Are there any special instructions you'd like me to abide by before we proceed?
Take your time and say whatever you want.
Honorable commissioners, fellow judges, and other interested attendees, for those who may not have met, my name is Keith Spaeth. I'm currently serving as administrative judge of the Butler County Court of Common Pleas General Division. The judges and I wish to thank you for allowing us to address you this morning and urge you to adopt a resolution to change the appointment, compensation, and system for indigent defense attorneys here in Butler County. As each of you know, indigent criminal defendants have a constitutional right to appoint a counsel, and the Ohio Revised Code charges the county commissioners with the responsibility to adopt a method for the appointment and system for compensation. The current system has been in place since the right to appoint a counsel was first recognized. It provides for individual appointments in each case, with each attorney keeping track of his or her time and submitting a fee application at an hourly rate of either $40 or $50 per hour for in-court or out-of-court time, respectively. As the number of cases have grown over the years in this court and the number of judges have went from 3 to 7, this individual appointment system has become very unwieldy, expensive, and difficult to police. Under the current system, the judges select and remove attorneys from the list and make individual appointments randomly and approve their fee applications. As administrative judge, I've received complaints from judges, defense lawyers, the prosecutor, ranging a wider range of complaints, but ranging from attorneys' delay or failure to arrive at court on time, the compensation rates, excessive billing practices, the types of cases assigned to individual attorneys. Has been a wide array of complaints. The current system is wasteful, requiring the county to compensate multiple attorneys for travel time and waiting time for their cases to be called in a single judge's docket. Despite the honest efforts and dedication of the majority of the lawyers on the court's appointed list, there have been billing abuses by a few. The current system rewards inefficiency, incompetency, and in a few instances, the unscrupulous attorney. At the same time, it penalizes or undercompensates the most competent, effective, and honest attorneys, which I am pleased to recognize represents the majority of the attorneys on our appointed list. For example, the competent attorney may effectively handle a case in 6 hours, while the less gifted attorney will bill the county for 12 or more hours. For years, the judges have recognized these deficiencies and discussed in our meetings a cost-effective alternative. The most common alternative to the appointment system, or the individual appointment system, is one which has been adopted by most metropolitan counties, is the establishment of a public defender's office. Of course, this option is available. However, the judges estimate that it will more than double or possibly triple the cost of providing appointed counsel from the current numbers. In fact, the judges have asked through Gary Yates, Derek Conklin, over the course of the last 2 years on two occasions, and I'm told that Derek made the phone call to invite the Ohio Public Defender's Office down to Butler County and make a proposal for what was needed. To my knowledge, no one has visited us here in Butler County from the Ohio Public Defender's Office, nor have there been any proposals made. I received a letter this morning when I arrived at work in my fax machine from the Ohio Public Defender's Office, and I think you may have a copy of that, which we gave to you, commissioners and Mr. Williams. So, after much thought and discussion, the judges have devised and proposed today a hybrid appointment system. In your packet of materials, I have included a local court rule 5.01B and a proposed county commission resolution which details the specifics of the hybrid system. Generally, it calls for engaging 14 independently contracted attorneys. The attorneys would be assigned randomly, two per courtroom. These attorneys would be assigned all indigent defendants requesting counsel, and it's anticipated that they would serve for a two-year period under a contract which provides compensation at $46,000 per year. In capital cases, or in cases which involve multiple defendants, or in cases in which the attorney may have a conflict of interest or must otherwise withdraw, those cases would be handled under our current appointment system and under the current compensation rates. The judges feel strongly that this system would reward efficient, competent attorneys for their efforts. It takes advantages of economies of scale while providing effective, individualized representation. The judges are further confident that the compensation rate of $46,000 a year is fair and will attract a number of qualified applicants. Now, Mr. Young, who wrote the letter from the Ohio Public Defender's Office, a copy of which you have, he suggests that the independence of counsel could be compromised because the judge is making the appointment and deciding who and who is not on the list. Gentlemen, this same system has been in place as long as I have practiced law. The judges have decided who's on the appointment list. If an attorney has failed to perform, or if an attorney has submitted a fraudulent fee application, the judges have made the decision to remove him or her from the list. So the judges have always been in a position basically to do the hiring and the firing. The upside is the judges only do that as a group and as a majority vote. It's not an individual judge who makes that decision, and it will not be in the future. So personality conflicts will not rule the day. It will be the rule of the majority of the judges. Gentlemen, in this difficult budgetary environment, the judges want to bring to the commissioner's attention that the proposed system would save the county money. I've included in your materials a breakdown, and this was prepared by me, a lawyer who's never very good at breaking down numbers. But at the top, it shows the current system, the hourly charges billed over the last 3 years averaged were $1,105,000. Under the current system, the county receives a reimbursement of 25%. That number is listed at $276,376. I was advised this morning, just before coming in here, that we received yesterday the actual number, which was more like $226,000. So it's just a little bit less. So the total direct cost just to Butler County, and the figure to the right is $829,000. The current system requires that we have at least one full-time employee making the assignments to the various courts and the attorneys to the various courts and cases. That person also reviews the applications and processes them and tries to make certain that we're being good stewards of the county's money. So we could reassign that person to another position, which is sorely needed in our administrative office. So we would save the county approximately $40,000 in that regard by not having to hire another person. I spoke with the auditor about a month ago. He said that in processing the fee applications from the Common Pleas Division requires about a third of a full-time employee. So that's another $13,000 personnel savings, for a total savings in that regard of $53,000. So the total cost of the current system is $882,428. The proposed system calls for 14 independently contracted attorneys of $46,000, which totals $644,000. There's a supernumerary account, which is basically just a fund that we can pay in those instances where there's a conflict of interest or which we have to appoint an attorney under our current system because of some other conflict, $56,000. So we anticipate that the current system, the hybrid proposed system, will cost $700,000 and project a savings under the current system of $182,428. I want to bring to your attention that under the proposed system, the county would no longer be seeking reimbursement of the 25% from the Ohio Public Defender's Office. In that fashion, the attorneys will not be required to complete all the paperwork and the administrative time associated with filling out that paperwork. The judges and the judges' staff will not be processing that paperwork, and the attorneys can simply focus on practicing law and not billing issues. So, I think it's important, and I know I've touched upon it two or three times, but the judges have been reluctant, although it's possibly needed. Well, I think it is. A change is needed. And the most natural change is to an Ohio Public Defender's Office. And that would be the Cadillac of systems. I mean, it would be wonderful. The judges would be completely out of it. We wouldn't have to oversee the staff to make the appointments, and that would be great. But from the county's perspective, I anticipate that our proposed system will only cost a third of what Ohio Public Defender's Office would cost. The law provides that a public defender's office would have a comparable budget to that of the prosecutor. You gentlemen know the numbers better than I, but I think the prosecutor's budget is $4 million. Now, of course, the prosecutor, only part of his staff is associated with prosecuting felonies in our court. So that number would have to be broken down, but you can easily see that the numbers could get quite high with a public defender's office. The judges realize that the adoption of an innovative change such as this will be difficult, and there'll be a number of unanticipated issues that'll have to be resolved as they arise. However, the judges are very committed to make every effort to see that this hybrid appointment system works. If it cannot be made to work, the contracts will provide that either party, either the attorney or the court, can cancel the contract with 30 days notice. And the proposed hybrid system would be abandoned, and we will be back in front of this body seriously asking that you adopt the Ohio Public Defender's Office here in Butler County and be forced to fund it. The judges appreciate the sincere efforts and dedication of the majority of our local defense attorneys who have provided zealous representation to their clients and worked ethically and honestly within the current system. Unfortunately, in the past few days, the proposal has resulted in a high degree of anxiety and apprehension regarding the change in the system. the judges, and I'm sure you as county commissioners are mindful that change is difficult, particularly when it affects one's livelihood. However, as elected officials, it is our primary responsibility to provide the most efficient and qualified attorneys to indigent defendants at the lowest cost possible to the taxpayer, not to protect the status quo. I urge the commissioners to take immediate action to adopt the proposed system so that the court can advertise these positions, engage in the selection process, execute the contracts, and begin making appropriate appointments to cases beginning November 1 so that the system, or the proposed hybrid system, can be fully implemented beginning calendar year January 1, 2009. Gentlemen, I thank you for your kind attention. Are there any questions?
Judge, how does this affect the prosecutor's office?
Not at all. I can't envision how it would affect the prosecutor's office, unless any of the other judges have thoughts in that regard.
You guys have any questions at this time?
Is there any other locale, any other county that is currently have adopted this system?
I'm not aware of one in Ohio, but I know in Indiana they have a system similar to this. The revised code envisions, and just but maybe a few years ago, the reimbursement rate from the Ohio Public Defender's Office was 50%. So there was much incentive for the counties to want to work within the Ohio Public Defender's system. The rate is continuing to drop. It was 28%. Less than a year ago, it's now 25%. I anticipate it will continue to drop. The Ohio Public Defender's system provides basically two systems, the one that we have currently, which is compensated either by the hour or by the case, or establishment of Ohio Public Defender's office. So the law doesn't prohibit us from this innovative solution, but the law also doesn't explicitly provide for it. So I'm not aware of other counties, and maybe the other judges are, but it's an example of, it wouldn't be the first time that Butler County was trying to be innovative to provide good services at a reasonable cost. And that's, you know, I think if all the judges, I'm pretty certain would agree, and I know I would, speaking personally, if we had a public defender system in here tomorrow, I'm fine with that. But I realize it's going to cost $2 or $3 million to fund that. I imagine somewhere between $2 and $2.5 million. And I don't think the county commissioners would appreciate absorbing that cost right now. So the judges have worked hard, and as reported in the newspaper, Judge Sage was the architect of this plan. I think it's extremely innovative, and it's worth a try. It may not work. If it doesn't work, then we'll have to abandon it and start fresh. But if it does work, then we're going to save the county over $1 million a year, and we can use that money somewhere else. Any other questions?
Is there a resolution that the commissioners passed to decide that you have to use the pool of you say 50 attorneys right now? Do we set up that pool, or is it a public defender's commission that does that?
Well, right now, as I said, it's the judges. For as long as I've been involved in the system, Greg, Commissioner Jolivet, it's the judges have administered the system. We take applications. In fact, we have a local policy and rule as to how the attorneys submit applications, you know, what needs to be attached, proof of liability insurance, professional insurance. And then the judges, again, vote at a meeting. It's a majority of the seven judges, either yes or no, to add that attorney to the appointed list or to remove that attorney from the appointed list. Under the proposed system, in the current system, the judges have tried their best to remove themselves from the individual appointment system, from saying, on this case, I would like John to represent this defendant. We try to put that in the hands of an administrative person who has a protocol that they must follow a random selection that goes through the list and then starts back at the top of the list, so that certain attorneys are not being handpicked for certain cases. But you know, the Ohio Public Defender's Office letter, if you read that letter, quite frankly, and apply the information in that letter to our current system, then if what they say is true, which I'm not conceding, then our current system is a violation of the ethics code and compromises the attorney's independence. And if you gentlemen believe that's true, then we have to abandon not only our current system but the proposed hybrid system and invite immediately the Public Defender's Office. But as I said, Derek has invited them twice over the course of the last 2 years, and to my knowledge, they haven't been down here. So I received this letter last night about 7 o'clock p.m., and it was there when I arrived this morning.
Judge, let me just say we appreciate all the work you've done, the rest of the judges, and going through this, and especially Judge Sage. The one sentence in this last paragraph from the Public Defender's Office says that they're more than willing to help and design a system that would not only save taxpayers money but provide quality representation and so on and so forth. I'm not certain that, are you certain that Derek made that contact?
Mr. Yates? Gary Yates is our court administrator, and he spoke with Derek in that regard.
And Judge, would it hurt if we, I understand the timing of this, but would it hurt if we, I read Judge Sage's comment in the paper. It said, you know, if they can do it, bring it on. I mean, they can do it for less money. Show us how to do it. I think that made a lot of sense. You think maybe we ought to take a look at that?
That is your call. This is your system, gentlemen, and I appreciate
that.
You know, to some degree, I hate to lose them. I don't want to rush into a bad decision, but I also don't want to lose momentum. You know, we've got this process. We've spent a lot of time trying to devise it, and would like to start it fresh in a calendar year. But if you think that it, as a body, would be more wise to try to get a proposal from the Ohio Public Defender's Office, we're willing to live with that, of course. And quite frankly, I think most of the judges would agree that, A, the judges are completely out of it. I mean, that's one less thing that we have to administer and oversee, and that'd be a great thing. And I think that we would have quality representation. And so if they're willing to do it and you're willing to fund it, great. Will they come in with a proposal that's going to cost the county $700,000 or whatever approximately that the judge's system proposes? I would be highly surprised.
Well,
because you're going to have to hire someone to administer. Hire the administrator, you're going to have to find office space, and then they're going to have to go out with all that over and secretaries, printers, computers, and then pay the attorneys. So naturally, in our system, of course, the attorneys would be forced to use their own office's computer. The attorneys would have their private practice, so they would have an office staff and computer to assist them. In a public defender's system, normally there's an office, and the public's paying the cost of the, you know, the overhead. So I think the judges, looking at it realistically, I think the judge's position is that it is unrealistic to expect that the Ohio Public Defender's Office is going to come in with a number that this body is willing to accept in terms of the cost of funding that program. And but it, you know, there is I guess some logic, and we can wait and see.
Thank you.
An option could be to move forward with this system and then invite the Public Defender's Office to participate in an investigation while we go forward with this system. You know, my position, I think the other judges, is, hey, if they can do it better, cheaper, more efficiently. I think we're, as Judge Space says, we're delighted because, again, even with this system, we have the responsibility of selecting and doing that, and we want to be completely out of the business. So if they can come down here and devise a system that removes us, we're delighted because, quite honestly, you know, I think we feel very strongly in the ABA principles that they discussed in their letter. I think those principles are very important, and in fact, they have been kind of the guiding light as we go through this process. We want independence of counsel. We want vigorous defense. We want competent representation, but we want to do it in an efficient manner as possible to the taxpayers because we have a responsibility to them just like you do. So, you know, my thought would be, let's move forward with this system, and we can again invite them. And again, we have twice during this period of discussion, and, you know, we didn't feel like the judges should be calling them. We think it should have been an invitation extended from the commissioners since you make this decision. So we have twice initiated that process, and quite honestly, it's a little bit disingenuous to send us a letter the morning before we show up here proposing to do the very thing we've asked them to do over the last several year period. But that's a separate issue in and of itself. But that was my thought, Mr. Commissioner Furman, is we could move forward with our system. We could invite them to come in and give you a proposal. And quite honestly, if their proposal was better, I will be the first one to stand up here and say I support it.
And then if we go forward with this, if there's a hitch or something, it's not a problem to reverse it. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. I think, you know, I don't want to speak for the other judges. Judge Spaeth is our spokesperson, but as the administrative judge. But, I mean, I think we all want what's best for the people who we're working for, which is to provide indigent representation to people who can't afford an attorney. And we have to, we want vigorous representation. We want competent representation. That's what this process is about. And quite honestly, had we didn't feel that way, we would simply just preserve the status quo indefinitely. So,
thank you.
Anyone else have any questions?
No.
Any of the other judges want to speak to this, or everybody in agreement? Everybody okay? Pardon me?
I do wish to speak.
Okay.
I'm Greg Howard. I am the president of the Butler County Bar Association, and I thank you for your time this morning. And as president of the Bar Association, I support what the judges are trying to do to make the system that is in place better. In that regard, I would also advocate for some changes to the current system, but what the judges are asking to do, in the Bar Association's opinion, would not provide for the effective representation of the indigent defendants in Butler County. For the most part, the attorneys that take the appointed cases do a good job for their clients. There are obviously some attorneys that don't have the requisite skills necessary to effectively represent their clients, resulting in not only the ineffective assistance of counsel, but an abuse of the current court-appointed system when it comes to billing. All of the judges want competent counsel on both sides of the case. It obviously makes their jobs easier as judges. What concerns the Bar Association is there was no input from the Bar Association in regard to this proposed change. There was no input from the criminal defense lawyers, the criminal defense bar, in regard to any of the issues that have been raised here today by any of the judges prior to this proposal being submitted. It was only learned recently in the past few weeks that this proposal was going to be made, and we've been scrambling, having meetings in regard to this situation to see what other proposals can be made. Hamilton County recently published the results of an exhaustive study of their county public defender's office. In reading the report, not only from a criminal defense attorney standpoint, but from anyone involved in the criminal justice system, it shows the enormous problems associated with providing indigent services to the poor when the compensation paid to those attorneys and the resources made available to them are significantly lacking. As set forth in that study, which would also be applicable in Butler County, regardless of this system that's currently in place, the judge's proposal, or public defender's office, the American Bar Association's 10 principles of a public defense delivery system constitute the fundamental standards that a public defense delivery system should meet if it is to deliver, in the American Bar Association's words, effective and efficient, high-quality, ethical, conflict-free representation to accused persons who cannot afford to hire an attorney. The Hamilton County study found their public defender system seriously lacking in the vast majority of the 10 principles. And in reading their report, one can see that by implementing this system, as proposed by the Common Pleas Court judges, the system would be the same here and have the same problems. The main dispute that the Bar Association has, and members of the Criminal Defense Bar has with the proposal, is in the number of cases that the attorneys would actually be handling under this system. That number directly affects the ability of the selected attorneys to adequately and effectively represent their clients, which further results in the selected attorney's inability to spend time devoted to other cases in order to meet their financial and familial obligations. The Butler County Bar Association believes the numbers presented by the Common Pleas Court judges are too low, and that the actual number of cases that the 14 chosen attorneys would be handling would be much higher, making the attorney's position as the court-appointed counsel more of a full-time position than a part-time position, denying them the opportunity to have a private practice on the side. I went to the Supreme Court website and looked at some numbers under the Ohio Courts Summary, and I looked at 2000 numbers because that's the last year that's available, and I went to Butler County's numbers. And I looked at the new felony filings that occurred in Hamilton, Fairfield, Middletown Municipal Courts, and the three county area courts. And those numbers, in 2007, there were 3,557 felony cases filed in those six courts. These cases, under the system as proposed by the judges, would be handled by an attorney in the court where that charge was filed. Once that case or client leaves that court, that attorney never sees that case again. It's assigned to one of the 14 attorneys under their system. Under the American Bar Association principles, principle number 7, the same attorney should continuously represent the client until completion of the case. The judge's proposal inhibits the establishment of an attorney-client relationship, fosters in attorneys a lack of accountability and responsibility for the outcome of a case, increases the likelihood of omissions of necessary work as the case passes between attorneys, is not cost-effective, and is demoralizing to clients as they are re-interviewed by a parade of attorneys, each starting from scratch. So taking that 3,557 number of criminal filings, not all of those cases make it to the Butler County Grand Jury for review. In 2007, the total number of cases that were bound over, either after a preliminary hearing or with a waiver of preliminary hearing, was 2,143. That number does not include direct indictments, cases presented directly to the grand jury for non-support cases, child sexual assault cases, homicides, other direct cases, bindovers from juvenile court, probation violations, and the accompanying probable cause hearings associated with probation violations. So in Butler County, when you go to the Clerk of Court's website, you find that there were 2,215 cases that were indicted in 2007. Going to the Supreme Court's website, for 2007, in the beginning, in January 1st, there were still 857 cases pending from the previous year, criminal cases. Those two total 3,072. Not all attorneys, or not all cases, are going to be given a court-appointed attorney. Some people in this county can afford to hire their own private attorney. So what I did is I took that 3,072 number of the cases that were still, that were heard in 2007, and picked 15%, and maybe 15% of those people could afford to hire their own private attorney. And I apologize. First, I'll go back to the 2143, which is the cases that were actually bound over. 85% of that number is 1,822. Under the judge's proposal, with 14 attorneys, each attorney would have 130 cases a year. If you break it down to 3 attorneys per courtroom, or 21 attorneys, it comes out to 91 cases per year for each court-appointed attorney to handle. If you go one step further and say that there's still not going to be effective representation, and you have 28 attorneys that are asked to do this case, these cases, it breaks down to 65 cases a year per attorney. And interestingly enough, the numbers, the Public Defender Commission has contracted with the Legal Aid Society here in Butler County to provide guardian ad litems for juvenile court, those attorneys have a cap of 70 cases. They cannot take any more than 70 cases. They have a salary of around $46,000 a year, and they have no office expenses, and they, I believe they are provided benefits. Going back to the 3,072 cases, though, which included the new filings in Butler County and the cases pending as of January 1st, 2007, 85% of that number is 2,611. So taking 2,611 cases on a yearly basis and dividing it up between 14 attorneys who are supposed to be part-time under this court-appointed system and maintaining their private practice comes out to 186.5 cases a year for each one of the 14 attorneys. If you have three attorneys in each courtroom, or 21 attorneys total, it comes out to 124 cases per year. If you go to 28, it's 93.25 cases per year for each one of the court-appointed attorneys under the judge's proposal. The problem that we see from the Bar Association is that a separate attorney is going to have the case at the preliminary hearing stage, and then a new attorney is going to be assigned either once the case is bound over or once the case is appointed. I'm not sure exactly what the judge's proposal says in regard to that, but I did have discussions with at least one judge that said you won't get the case until the case is indicted and the person is arraigned. That is an even bigger problem because an attorney cannot wait until the case is actually indicted to begin working on the case. They must get involved as quickly as possible. And some of the best work is done prior to the presentation of a case to the grand jury when extensive plea negotiations can begin. If the attorney waits until the indictment has been filed, his client may be in a worse position, and he may as well not have had an attorney at all, which in essence we believe is what the judges are proposing. Under the judge's proposal, these 14 assigned counsel would be lawyers who have their own private offices that they must support through their earnings before having any income left over for themselves. Overhead is generally defined as all of the costs of being available to do business before actually representing a single client. $46,000 is nothing to sneeze at, especially if it is truly for part-time work. But it is not part-time work. Conservatively estimating the expenses of the attorneys that take court appointments under this system or be one of the 14 attorneys, taking into consideration rent and miscellaneous expenses on an annual basis of $12,000, a shared part-time secretary for $7,500, malpractice insurance for $1,000, utilities of $1,200, telephone $1,800, miscellaneous supplies $1,000, Social Security and payroll taxes $10,000, comes out to $34,500, leaving $11,500 to meet all of their other financial obligations, their mortgage, their utilities, their food and groceries, car payments, child support. And with the caseload that has been proposed, the 14 attorneys would have little to no time to devote to any other clients to establish their private practice on the side and to meet their financial obligations. We have heard from a meeting I had with the judges yesterday that the judges believe that for the attorneys selected, only 20 hours per week would be devoted to the court-appointed cases. And the Bar Association does not believe that to be accurate. Being a defense attorney myself, having done this for almost 21 years, with the caseload that these attorneys would have and the resources available to them, 20 hours is not accurate. I'll provide the commission with a partial list of ethical duties required of an attorney to effectively represent a client. For a plea, each attorney must meet and interview their client, either in their office or at the jail. With 14 attorneys and four, maybe five interview rooms at the Butler County Jail, attorneys getting in to see their clients and competing with those attorneys that are retained, competing with the probation department, competing with mental health professionals, competing with the adult parole authority, and all the logistics in the jail, meeting with clients will be a significant amount of time. A lot of the indigent defendants cannot afford to post bond and obviously would be in jail. An attorney must also prepare and file necessary initial motions. An attorney must receive and review the state's response to their initial motions. They must conduct any necessary factual investigation, including locating and interviewing witnesses, locating and obtaining documents, which in this case, since the attorneys would not have had the benefit of seeing the case at the preliminary hearing stage, would entail them to have to drive to all of the municipal courts in the county, Westchester, Middletown, Oxford, Fairfield, to Hamilton, wherever their offices are, to obtain these documents, because it's the criminal defense bar's experience that most courts refuse to fax paperwork to you because they are too busy. Attorneys would have to locate and examine physical evidence, investigate possible defenses, and do it on their own, unless the court approves for the expenditure of funds to hire investigators in each one of these cases. The attorneys must do legal research. They must prepare and file case-specific motions. They must conduct any necessary motion hearings. They must engage in plea negotiations with the state. They must conduct any necessary status conferences with the judge in the state. They must prepare for trial. They must meet with their client to prepare for trial. And they must prepare to examine and cross-examine witnesses. That's all that needs to be done under an ethical obligation for purposes of a plea. But not every case is going to plea. So the additional duties for the case that actually go to trial are to review jury questionnaires and prepare voir dire, analyze potential and final jury instructions, and conduct the actual trial itself, whether it takes a day, 2 days, 3 days, or 4 days. After trial, the attorneys must gather favorable information regarding their client, prepare sentencing witnesses and documents for presentation to the court, review the pre-sentence investigation, draft sentencing memorandum where appropriate, advocate for your client's best interest at sentencing, and file any necessary notices of appeal. The one thing that we attorneys have experienced, like I said, been doing this 20 years, and more happens, is the hand-holding of the clients and the hand-holding of the clients' families, which is not factored into any of this. We routinely get phone calls from the clients' families wanting an update on their case because their son or their daughter is in jail or their husband's in jail. Can you tell me what's going on? They show up in court, and we can't ignore them in court. Otherwise, they file grievances to the Bar Association because we're not paying attention to them and being attentive to their needs. So we've got to talk to the clients after court. We have to talk to the clients after hours. We have to talk to the clients on weekends. We have to talk to their families all during the same time. The judge's proposal does also not take into consideration Judge Spaeth's drug court, Judge Sage's SAMI court, and we also have arraignment dockets where the attorneys would have to appear for various judges who have their magistrates just conduct arraignments. And then, since the capital cases are not part of this, what then happens to the capital cases? Presently, there are five attorneys eligible to take court-appointed capital cases: myself, Christopher Pagan, Melinda Cook-Reich, David Brewer, and David Washington. I believe one of the concerns of the judges, as well as the representation the people are receiving in this county, is the fact that some attorneys do not have offices in this county. They have shell offices. They have a building or a room they're renting at the Society Bank building. Under the judge's proposal, David Washington would be no longer eligible to take court-appointed cases, leaving four attorneys. I've been doing this 20 years. Almost 21 in November. I've had probably 20 capital cases. It's time for me to stop. It's time for me to step down and stop doing them. Mr. Pagan feels the same way. I've talked to him about this, and this is not a reaction to this. So that leaves two attorneys in this county, Melinda Cook-Reich and David Brewer, to handle all the capital cases that would come through. And if they are two of the 14 attorneys selected by the judges to handle these cases, and then burdened with handling every capital case that comes forward, with one of them being lead counsel and the other one being second chair on the case, how and when do they devote the time to their regular clients and devote the enormous amount of time that a capital case requires to properly prepare for trial and mitigation? What about the situation where they're... It's my understanding that the judges want that attorney or these two attorneys to be in court every day for their court dates. That prohibits then the attorney from taking a retained case, working in his private practice, and taking a retained case that would have to be set on that day and not be able to appear in front of the common pleas court for which they've been assigned to. If a different attorney handles the case in the lower court and actually conducts a preliminary hearing, who pays for the transcript of that hearing? How do we get investigators on every case since we've not had the case from the beginning, have not had an opportunity to talk to witnesses? Who then pays for the investigator, and how often do these court-appointed attorneys or the 14 attorneys get investigative services? So due to the increase in the caseload that Butler County has, we added a seventh common pleas court judge last year. What the judges are asking in this proposal is to decrease the number of attorneys and increase the workload of the attorneys that would be selected. So what is the real goal here? Is it to provide the best possible defense to the indigent defendants of this county, or is it to save as much money as possible during these tight financial times? As I said, the Bar Association is behind the judges in advocating for changes to the current system. But the dispute in numbers of cases that each attorney would actually have is the overriding concern, which directly reflects on the indigent defendant's rights to the effective assistance of counsel. With that in mind, the Butler County Bar Association does not agree with this proposal and would ask the commissioners to refer this case to the County Public Defender Commission for them to investigate and determine what is best for the citizens of Butler County and make a recommendation to the county commissioners as to the best system that should be put in place in order to ensure that the indigent criminal defendants get the best representation they can get.
Chris Beck, you want to
rebut?
Yeah. Well, before you do that, Mr. Howard,
yes.
with your dissertation of how you foresee this happening, do you foresee anybody applying for the job?
I do. You're going to have attorneys that don't have a choice. You're going to have attorneys that have recently gone out on their own after being in private practice with other attorneys that have purchased buildings that have first and second mortgages on those buildings, that have no alternative but to take this, to sacrifice the time that they have with their family and their other clients in order to meet their bills. You'll have attorneys to do it. And I understand what the judges want to do. They want the 14 best attorneys on the list. They're not going to get the 14 best attorneys on the list. They'll get maybe five or six, maybe more, I don't know, maybe one, maybe two, I don't know. But they're also going to get ones that they don't want, who don't have the experience, that will continue to have the same problems in the Bar Association and the Criminal Defense, the Criminal Law Committee's opinion. I think tweaks can be made to the current system. There's no right to be on the court-appointed attorney list right now, as there is. There's no requirements other than you have a law license, you've passed the bar, and you go up and you tell the assignment commissioner you want to be on the list. I assume they meet with the judges and the judges approve it. But there's 50-something cases on the attorneys on the list now. All of those attorneys probably shouldn't be on the list. And then take them off. If you have problems with attorneys that are fudging their billing, that are doing things that shouldn't be done, take them off the list. Meet with the criminal defense bar to discuss these changes, to discuss these issues. Conduct seminars. I was a bailiff for 3 years when I was in law school. I worked for Judge Brewer. I worked for Judge Elliott. I got a free education on how to try a case. I watched numerous attorneys. I watched Mike Sage as a prosecutor. I watched Craig Hedrick as a prosecutor. I tried cases with Keith Spaeth. I tried cases with Andy Nastoff. I've been around these people. I've seen them. But I got an invaluable experience, invaluable internship, mentoring program, being a bailiff and watching how to try cases. The young attorneys, the attorneys on this list, there's no qualifications other than having a law license and being licensed to practice in the state of Ohio. Make them do some mandatory seminars. Order the Bar Association to do it. Let's work with the judiciary and the Bar Association to do this. Our concern is, as I said, the judges just decided to do this without any input. We would like to have had input to be able to come to you as the commissioners and present a joint proposal that we think would work.
You stated that the Bar Association says that the change is needed and they're willing to make these changes. Where has the Bar Association been prior to this?
We've not. I specifically have not heard any direct complaints from any of the judges. I've been the president since April. I've been practicing in this county for a number of years. I know that there are issues with the court-appointed system. They made changes years ago. They went through to a merit-type system where certain attorneys were only allowed to take certain types of cases. They abandoned that. I'm not sure the exact reasons. I haven't taken a court appointment other than on capital cases in 8 years, so I don't know what the protocol was in regard to that. But the Bar Association, I've been on the board, I think, for 5 or 6 years now. It's never been addressed, Mr. Furman.
Thank you.
If a person is arrested in say, Hamilton, and goes before Judge Gademeier, and that appointed attorney doesn't follow that case all the way through?
Currently, he does. Under the current system, if it's a felony charge, they contact the Common Pleas Court Assignment Commissioner, go down the list, see who's next, and appoint an attorney for that case.
Right at the municipal level or township level?
Yes, sir.
Or what?
Yes, sir. Then that attorney does the preliminary hearing. If it gets bound over, gets indicted, that attorney stays with that case until it's ended. Under this system, the lower courts, municipal courts and the area courts, would have to have attorneys, I'm assuming still paid by for the county, to handle all those cases in that lower court. And once that case is bound over, whether it's by waiver of a preliminary hearing or by conducting the preliminary hearing, that attorney's done with it. And then once it gets bound over and assigned a case number at common pleas and assigned to a judge, it goes to one of the attorneys that are assigned to that judge.
Well, Mr. Yates, I think, was shaking his head no.
Not in all courts we're doing that. Area 2 is not Area 2 court has a system where they're assigning specific attorneys to those lower court cases, so they're not all cases are being followed through that way. And I understand the other two area courts are looking at that same process as we've had meetings with them.
Thank you.
Well, the judges respect the comments of Greg Howard and the other fine defense attorneys. Mr. Howard, I think, is very sincere in his comments and in his concerns. The judges feel that, for example, that the numbers, the judges disagree with the numbers. The prosecutor's office advised me yesterday in 2006, the number of indicted felony cases, 1,713, in 2007, 1,677. So it would be an average under our proposed system of 120 cases if none of the cases retained counsel, 100% appointed counsel, no one went out and hired their own attorney. There'd be 120 cases divided per attorney, rather. So each week, that attorney would receive 2.3 new cases. And the judges feel that that would, you could represent 2.3 cases on a part-time basis and be fairly compensated. The Mr. Howard's comments do not indicate and reflect some of the efficiencies that would be built into the system. Under the current system, an attorney has to effectively be at all seven judges' dockets, including all the municipal and county court dockets, throughout the week. Under this system, that attorney, that defense attorney, would effectively be in one judge's docket, which normally their criminal docket is confined for pleas and pretrials to a half a day on a set day per week. So I think it would give the defense attorney a lot more control of his or her calendar, and they'd be able to effectively manage their time, and that, of course, would be a plus. Under the system, if it was me that misspoke or one of the other judges, I apologize for either myself or him, but the attorney would be assigned at bindover. So when the case number was assigned, that attorney would receive the case. It's a complicated system, gentlemen, and I'd like to be able to address some of these issues. We used to, up until 2 years ago when I became administrative judge, quite frankly, this appointed system was a mess. I mean, we were having a lot of problems. And one of the problems that we were having is we assigned cases based upon merit. Well, we have one administrative employee who was responsible for assigning cases in five municipal and county courts based upon the level of felony. She would find out a day or two in advance of the preliminary hearing when the attorney needed to be there what kind of case it was, and then she'd have to look on her list and see who was qualified to take that level of felony. Some attorneys refused to take, for example, sex offender cases. So you would have to find the attorney that qualifies under the right requirements and then assign them to the case, and then that attorney would get a phone call that you need to be in Hamilton Municipal Court tomorrow morning or the day after tomorrow. That attorney would say, I can't be there. Or that attorney would do their best to try to get there. They'd get tied up in another court, and then Judge Rosemarin's calling me, which he called me on multiple occasions, letting me know that our attorneys didn't arrive in their court at the right time. So we abandoned that system. We changed it. Do you need to get that, Commissioner Dixon?
No.
We abandoned that system. We said, all right, if you're an attorney licensed in Ohio, you're competent to handle any case, and we are going to assign in each court, for example, to Hamilton Municipal Court, on each day, two attorneys, and whatever felony cases are, and we're going to make that assignment 3 months in advance, and whatever cases are filed and brought to that court on that day, you will handle. And that's why we abandoned that system. As I bring that up, I guess, as an example of, it's okay, that system may have worked when we had three judges and we only had a fraction of the number of felony cases that we currently have. But this system is becoming unwieldy with seven judges and a metro, you know, an advancing county with a growing population and a growing caseload. And so we have to keep making compromises to this system, the current system, to make it work. And one of the compromises is we're not going to break down the felony levels. And so that system continues to become weaker and weaker and more difficult to manage. So I urge you again to adopt the system, to adopt it now, and as Judge Sage suggested, let's collectively, the county commissioners, the judges, and the Bar Association, invite the Ohio Public Defender's Office to come down, do an assessment, make a proposal. We can abandon this system basically within 30 days. We can shut it down. If we don't get 14 qualified attorneys to apply, we're going to be forced to shut it down, try to work within our own system. But we're going to very much be required to urge the county commissioners to invite the Ohio Public Defender's Office to address this, because both the judges and the defense bar are in agreement with one thing, that the current system has some deficiencies, and the public defender system would be the Cadillac. And is there some middle ground that we can all get by on? I don't know. Maybe this system will work. Maybe the defense lawyers will find that it does work. Maybe the judges will find that it simply doesn't work, and the lawyers find that it doesn't work, and we have to abandon it. But it seems to me that little will be lost from attempting to try this. It's innovative. It's different. But that doesn't necessarily make it wrong. So, any other judges wish to fill in?
I just have one brief comment, and I'm glad Judge Sage got to participate. Got the number of cases that were indicted last year, which was 1,677. But as he indicated, the attorneys could assign the case of bind over, which is 2,143 cases that were bound over, and 85% of that was the 1,822. You can't ignore the case once it's been bound over and wait for it to see if it's been indicted. So with more of 130 cases per lawyer under the 14 lawyers that they're proposing. The fact that only 1,600 got indicted, that's great. But you can't ignore these clients once the case gets bound over and hope that it doesn't get indicted or wait to see if it does get indicted. You've got to work out gun specifications. You've got to work out life sentences for your client that may be indicted for something that you can't deal with later on. You can't ignore these people.
Thank you. Commissioners, there's a proposed resolution in your packet. If you would like to make some modifications, or that's on a word processing document in one of our computers, and we'll be glad to get that to you or make any changes that you would like to see.
What would be the pros or cons of trying this in one court, one judge trying it, and as a pilot, taking that as a to see if it does work instead of using all seven judges?
Well, we discussed that, and we had volunteers. The collective concern was it'll become even more difficult to administer. Now we're trying to administer two systems within the same court system. So we thought it best to dive in, give it a shot, try to make it work. We're going to have to tweak the system. As I said, I'm certain, and as Greg Howard pointed out, there's going to be a number of issues that we're going to have to overcome, and hopefully we'll continue to work in a spirit of cooperation and innovation and find a solution that works for everyone. But, you know, we can sit here and poke holes in any proposal, but what I'm suggesting to you is we have seven judges willing to bend over backwards to try to make this work and save the county what I estimate over $1 million a year, and that's the best we can do for you.
Judge, I applaud you for all your innovative thinking, all of you, and for what you're putting forth here. I, for one, would like to see give it a try, and I don't see a downside since it can be changed later on. I don't know of any place in the state, or any other state for that matter, that we have a group of more ethical judges that are held in any higher standard than they are here. And I have to think that you're doing this for the betterment of the clients and of the county. And I, for one, would like to give a try.
Thank you, Commissioner.
You guys have any comments?
Well, I understand the judge's desire to move quickly on this, but I think I need to think about this a little bit more. I'm not an attorney or a judge, and need to talk to not only our prosecutor, who may have some concerns. I'm not sure if the judges have talked to him, just to give him a heads up with this, but I'd like to check with him to make sure that there's nothing that we're not thinking about that creates a problem. Also, the defense commission, criminal justice, was that what you said? Public Defenders Commission. I think they need to weigh in on this. I think that we need to take a look at his numbers, the judge's numbers, and think about this a little bit. So I'm not at a position to make a decision today, but it will be in the near future. You know, the integrity of our court is utmost important to our society. We've spent, in this county, spent millions of dollars making sure that the trappings of justice are respectful and respected. And that's very important for the citizens of Butler County to know that the ministering of justice and the quality of justice is top-notch. And with especially to those people that cannot afford to have an attorney, we need to make sure that quality is there and that that is not compromised. So that's why it is going to take me just a while to think about this and to ask for more input. And I guess I'd like to hear more of about my idea of using a pilot program with one of the judges to see if that would work, and we could easily adopt it on a, you know, judge-by-judge system as it comes out. I'd like to explore that and see if that would work. But I'm not in a position today to make a decision.
Well, you know, I think that, first of all, I wanted to commend the judges for all the hard work they've done, and I know you're trying to deal with this in a way that benefits everyone. I'm a little concerned that the numbers, our case numbers, are so far off. I mean, I don't understand that, but I think I can understand it if we get the right information. I like to get that number. I heard that Area 2 is doing something a little different than the rest of them. Maybe that would fit in the pilot program, Judge. I don't know. I guess I'm interested in seeing if a pilot program works. If we could work one, I think that, you know, I've found around here when we all jump in real quick, we kind of like to jump back out somewhere along the road. So I don't know if there's a way to do that, but I mean, that may be a solution. The part that I liked was to go ahead and implement it and then work with the Bar Association and the Ohio Defenders, get that input, continually monitor this. Judge, you said it's going to have to be tweaked and turned and twisted. I understand that. So I would like to take just a little bit of time to get those numbers and look at that and see if we can't come up with a compromise that gets you guys started where you want to be, because I think it makes sense. The caseload is I think, going to – that shouldn't be hard to figure out. The numbers are the numbers, and we can get those from the prosecutor's office, I guess, is a place to get that. And I just think that – you know, maybe we ought to. I haven't talked to the prosecutor about it. I don't know. Has anybody talked to the prosecutor's office about it? I mean, I know they have to be involved somewhat, I guess. I don't know how much, but he is the person that we rely on as well as you guys to tell us legally and what's the proper thing to do. But, you know, I have to say that, you know, I understand the concept. I think it makes sense. I think it's innovative. Just want to make sure we get the right numbers. I'd like to ask the judges to consider a pilot program like we talked about. And if that doesn't work, then some sort of a resolution amended to include the Bar Association and the Ohio Defenders League to do a review of this in some kind of a timely manner, and to everybody sit down and look at it and see how we can, if it's working, if it's not, how we change it. I understand the thought process that, you know, we can undo it quickly. I mean, that's no harm, no foul kind of thing. That's, you know, that's good. I understand that, you know, you're willing to look at the effectiveness of it. I understand that the Public Defender's Office is a big step, and certainly that's money that the county doesn't have at this time, but I also understand we're dealing with the courts and rights and all that other issues that sometimes it's hard to weigh the issue between fairness and what it costs. And so I'd like to take just a little bit of time to look at those kind of things. I'm more in your column than not. I want to do a little more homework, and I don't think it's something that's going to take a lot of time to do. I think we can probably do it in a matter of a couple of weeks at the most. So if you can get us some more information, if we ask for it, help us with that, maybe help us with some of this wording on the resolution, I think we can accomplish this. And I do appreciate the thoughtfulness you guys have put into this. You judges have just, I mean, it's seldom that we have people in charge coming and showing us a way to save money and make the system work, and that is to be commended. So I do appreciate that, and I don't take it lightly. So thank you very much for your time.
On behalf of the judges, thank you, commissioners, for your time and efforts. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Judge. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
I have to stand up.
Yeah.
Well, at this time, we'll go into communications, please.
I move to approve the minutes.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
Commissioner Dixon?
Yes.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
We have a resolution to some separate resolutions here. We have a resolution to adopt an amendment to a previous resolution that indicates that the road in question is on Hamilton Mason Road.
Move to approve.
Second.
Commissioner Jolivet. Commissioner.
Yes.
And abstain. Commissioner Furman.
Yes.
We have four separate resolutions that I think we can combine into, you know, one vote. These are change orders in cabling for the administration building at Princeton Road.
I move to approve change order number 1, number 2, number 3, and number 4.
Second.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
Commissioner Dixon abstain. Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
We move on to travel and training. We have training for the prosecutor's office, Lance Salyers, for National Institute of Prosecution Domestic Violence, $1,500, Chicago, Illinois. We have training requests for the clerk of courts, James Sackenheim, for the 2008 Maximus Solutions Client Conference, $670 in Columbus. We have a request for Tim Felsberg and Brian Davidson, CSEA, to attend the Ohio Child Support Directors Association, Dublin, Ohio, $921. We have transfers and resolutions, and I'll pass these out to you. Pass that down. It's two pages. We have four resolutions for the general fund. First is to a correction in accounts for 50 cents. Next is to make our semiannual transfer of $55,000 to the Addis Board. The third is to correct a prior year error for a deposit that was deposited in the general fund for $119,163. It should have gone into the sheriff's contract fund. Finally, to advance $8,592.62 for a debt repayment that will be repaid. Under area court, there's $1,000 transferred between accounts to purchase additional publications for judges. Juvenile rehab transferred between two accounts to accommodate some unbudgeted salaries. The Sheriff's Marine Patrol transfer between two accounts to adjust the budget to equal the grant that was received. For the Sheriff's Commissary Fund, there's an appropriation that is needed to bring up the amounts in that fund or appropriations budget to the statutory amount. Water and sewer request an increase in budget of $10,000 into their sewer fund, $10,225 to budgeted unbudgeted backup damages for four bridges apartments. Then the sewer department has requested a decrease in budget of approximately from $3,300 to $1,600 each one for budget not needed for workers' comp charges. Sewer capacity fund increases budget by $29,000 to appropriate for a reimbursement to a developer. Sewer fund transfer between accounts in order to account for restoration costs. Continuing in the sewer replacement and improvement fund, there's a transfer of $10,000 to adjust for the number of manholes in a particular project. There's a transfer of $35,000 from general CIP to a specific new project. Then in the water fund, there's various reductions in budget to account or for workers' comp charges that are not needed, from $57 to $1,047. In the water fund also, there's a small penny elimination adjustments to various accounts. The water capacity fund is a transfer between accounts from general CIP to specific projects for the Hamilton Mason widening and additional funds for the closeout and capitalization of labor for the quarter. Water replacement improvement fund, there's $8,100 transfer from general CIP to the Hamilton Mason widening project. There's $32,000 transfer from general CIP to the La Swordsville Bridge project. There's a transfer of $104,000 from general CIP to the Princeton Water Relocation Project, a new project, and there's additional $1,200 needed for the closeout of and capitalization of labor for the quarter. Finally, in the Justice Assistance Grant, 5625, there's an increase of budget of $35,773 to appropriate or make it equal to the grant funding from the JAG grant. As we move on to personnel, we have 21 personnel changes to consider today. The first is Tammy Wright, audit technician, a leave of absence for the period August 18th, November 14th. Second is Patrick Southern, an attorney, to accept the resignation effective August 20th. Next, under juvenile rehab, Victor Russo, youth leader, a leave of absence for 3 days, August 6th, August 19th, and August 28th. Next, in Job and Family Services, Deidre Reed, suspension of 3 days. Next, in Job and Family Services, Lewith Recoth, eligibility referral specialist 2, a temporary pay adjustment to $19.57. Next, Job and Family Services, Marion Dehart, referral specialist 2, there's a step and a mentor adjustment to $21.08. A 7.4% increase. The mentor adjustment is a temporary assignment. Under Children's Services, Serena Knight has a comp payout of comp hours of $371.60. Next is Tracy Smith, step increase to $22.02, a 3.2% increase. Next, Kelly Souter, step increase to $21.49, a 3.3% increase. Next, Paul Cook step increase to $19.20, a 3.3% increase. Next, Aaron Holbrook, an educational pay adjustment to $19.65, a 5.7% increase. Next, Joe Nash, step increase to $21.69, a 3.3% increase. Next, Sarah Nesbitt, a step increase to $19.32, a 3.3% increase. Next, Carrie Stewart, suspension of 3 days. Next is Carrie Lambert, step increase to $20.99, a 3.3% increase. Next, Stacy Smith, step increase to $14.81, a 3.3% increase. Next, Jamie McCaffrey, a step increase to $17.01, a 3.3% increase. Next, Jack Wright in Environmental Services, temporary reassignment to wastewater collections worker to $21.32, a 5.4% increase. Next, Marissa Gardner in Children's Services, a license adjustment to $23.84 an hour. That's a 4% increase. Next, in Environmental Services, an inspector, Edward Reynolds, has submitted his resignation. Finally, Environmental Services, Dan Rosemarin, Customer Service Tech 2, a disability separation beginning retroactively back to July 18, 2008. Next, Job and Family Services is submitting 5 resolutions for your approval today. The first is an amendment to an already approved contract with Sojourner Recovery Services, which increases the number of beds that is part of the contract. Secondly, there's a request to approve an agreement with Lifespan for July 1, 2008 to June 30, 2009 in the amount of $50,000. This particular program provides intensive home-based intervention for risk and families to improve the family dynamics in order to help to keep the family together. These were separate contracts in the past between Children's Services and Job and Family Services. They're combining into one contract at a savings of $10,000. And more importantly, whereby previously part of these contracts were paid from levy dollars, they are now all paid from TANF-eligible funds. Next, you're asked to approve an agreement with the Butler County Educational Service Center in the amount of $310,000. This is the community wraparound contract. This is, again, a contract that's targeted to stabilize funding for the family unit. It educates and advocates the social workers to work with the families and the children to focus on improving the children's academic outcome, to identify clinical issues, health and behavior-wise. Also identify social or emotional issues and direct any needed support or other services to these particular families. This is another example where previously these were separate contracts that existed in Job and Family Services and Children's Services. They are combined now into one contract, and this is another example where previously part of the dollars for these contracts were paid from levy dollars, and now they're 100% TANF-related dollars. Next, you're asked to approve another contract with Butler County Educational Service Center, July 1, 2008 to June 30, 2009 for Help Me Grow program. This is in the amount of $1,730,000, $30,435. This is a state-directed allocation. The state directs us to provide these specific amounts and services. The services, again, focuses on families, and it really targets prenatal and children up to 3 years old, whereby the social workers has worked directly with the families to identify any potential developmental problems of the child and to seek assistance and help therein and help develop goals for the family and the infant, and follows up on the infant's development over time. Next, there's a another contract for Job and Family Services, which is the Kinship Navigator contract with the Butler County Educational Service Center for $74,000. Again, this is a TANF related project that provides social workers.